I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Specters, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm Tom, this is Sam, and we are continuing talking about Rex, who's, you know, one of the best companions. I mean, everybody loves different companions for different reasons, but I mean, Rex is just great. I love Rex. But yeah, last time we talked about pre-Mass Effect 1, and this time we're getting into Mass Effect 1. We're picking up where we left off, right?
Yeah, exactly. In fact, we're picking up exactly where the Foundation comic for Rex leaves us. And, you know, he was trying to track down Fist, if you remember, and then He actually ends up running into Maya Brooks way before we meet her in the Citadel DLC. But now, as you remember, he doesn't actually find Fist. And so he's still trying to find Fist, and that's exactly where Mass Effect 1 picks up, so we have a little clip of that that we can dissect.
Here we go.
Witnesses saw you making threats in Fist's bar. Stay away from him.
I don't take orders from you.
This is your only warning, Rex.
You should warn Fist. I will kill him.
You want me to arrest you?
I want you to try.
Go on. Get out of here.
Do I know you, human?
My name's Shepard. I'm going after Fist. Thought you might want to come along.
Shepard. Commander Shepard. I've heard a lot about you. We're both warriors, Shepard. Out of respect, I'll give you a fair warning. I'm going to kill Fist.
Fist knows you're coming. We'll have a better chance if we all work together.
My people have a saying, seek the enemy of your enemy, and you will find a friend.
Glad to have you on the team, Rex.
Let's go. I hate to keep Fist waiting.
Let's go. Hate to keep Fist waiting.
Yeah, I love that line. That line about, yeah, you should tell Fist. I'll kill him.
Right. Yeah, all like, the bravado and like, yeah, like I want you to try, you know, that kind of thing.
It feels almost I think part of it here is the masterful delivery of the lines, because if it were like obvious bravado, right, it might come across as annoying, but it's not. And, You know, it is, the delivery is so matter of fact. It is Confidence, but not arrogance.
Right. And it's also a representation to us as the player or viewer of not just Rex, but Krogan in general. This feeling of like they are immovable objects, right? Like,
yes.
Like it's giving us a thing to then project onto the race as a whole, because it's our first experience. So, you know, we extrapolate that. So it makes sense that it was specifically written in that way.
Rex is kind of the embodiment here, of then walk soft and carry a big stick.
Mm-hmm.
He's not coming out swinging at these officers needlessly.
Right.
But
right. And he's not raising his voice. He's just saying how it is, you know.
Like, and he has the confidence that you feel that he can back this up,
right.
And that it's kind of hard not to love that, right? In like a character, but I also want to pull like specific attention to the very first time that we meet Rex. It can either be outside CSEC headquarters, like this clip that was shown. Thank you, by the way, to Jaguar 550. In case anyone wants to see compilations of Mass Effect scenes, Jaguar 550, incredibly prolific, putting them on YouTube. So big thanks to them. But anyway, that can either be outside of CSEC headquarters, or you can run into him outside of Fist's office in Cora's Den. Either way, Rex is telegraphing exactly what he's going to do if he finds Fist. He's going to kill him.
Right.
And
matter of fact.
So, So you should not be surprised, basically, if there comes a time when Rex is face-to-face with Fist and he kills him.
Right, because he's telling you what he's going to do. Also, it's kind of funny, the dialogue between him and Shepard, and how Shepard just watched all of this play out and just saw all of this bravado and just like the willingness to just murder a guy. And he's like, welcome aboard.
Like, yeah. You look perfect for a disciplined military ship, right. State-of-the-art technology, very highly classified technology aboard. Why don't you come on board? You're a mercenary, you say? Ah, okay, so you work for whoever's the highest bidder? Got it.
Yeah. Welcome
very
aboard.
Very good.
Come on, you've heard about me? Cool. Join the team.
Right. And so, you know, before Mass Effect 2 and before Mass Effect 3, where Rex plays more of this lovable grandpa role, because that's all I know how to, like, put it. Uh-huh. Like, uh-huh. That's how he kind of plays in Mass Effect 2 and 3. Mass Effect 1 does a great job at reminding us, even on subsequent playthroughs, that Rex is a grizzled mercenary at heart. Mm-hmm. He is a cold, mm-hmm. stone-cold son of a bitch.
Yeah, doesn't give two thoughts. Yeah. Yeah.
No, and he will pull the trigger if he believes that there's reason to.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Actually, if he just is paid to.
Right. Yeah, the circumstances don't have to be that tricky. They could be very simple.
Right. He's kind of like the Hound in Game of Thrones.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
He has a set of morals, mm-hmm. but they're very murky. And he will finish a job just to finish a job. However, he's not a hero.
Right. Also, it feels like, especially with these kinds of jobs, it's not personal. This has nothing to do with the Krogan or the Genophage or any of that stuff that he would find to be very personal. It's just like, you pay me to do a job, I'm going to do the job.
Right. And he does have, he compartmentalizes very clearly. He compartmentalizes very well into this is business, this is personal. But he does have some of that fuck the king attitude, you know, uh-huh. you know what I mean?
Yeah.
As evidenced here by that confrontation with C-Sec. Now, we do get a little bit more of who Rex is past this initial recruitment, and we get it pretty soon after Rex goes on board the Normandy.
Here's the next clip. Check this out.
Wait! Don't kill me! I surrender!
Where's the Quarian?
She's not here. I don't know where she is. That's the truth.
He's no use to you now. Let me kill him.
Wait. I don't know where the Quarian is, but I know where you can find her. The Quarian isn't here. Said she'd only deal with the Shadow Broker himself.
Face to face? Impossible. Even I was hired through an agent.
Nobody meets the Shadow Broker. Ever. Even I don't know his true identity. But she didn't know that. I told her I'd set a meeting up. But when she shows up, it'll be Saren's men waiting for her.
Give me the location. Now.
Here on the wards, the back alley by the markets. She's supposed to meet them right now. You can make it if you hurry.
What are you doing?
The Shadow Broker paid me to kill him. I don't leave jobs half done.
We don't shoot unarmed prisoners.
How many people died because of him? He brought this on himself. Besides, we have more pressing concerns.
Okay, so that's exactly what I'm talking about. I thought, for some reason in my mind, I forgot which the order of clips was in our own notes. But yes, this is his confrontation with Fist, and surprise, he kills him. As
right,
he told yeah. you he would.
Right, absolutely. And even the rest of the group is like, hey, wait a minute, what are you doing? And he's like, I've been clear about this the whole time.
He's like, I literally don't know how else I could have put this to you guys.
Right.
I will kill him. yeah. And like, he doesn't feel bad about it. Like, he's just like, yeah, I was paid to kill him.
Right.
And I told you guys I would do that.
Right. I'm a good employee. I follow through. Like, what's wrong with this right. situation? What
and also,
about?
Rex kind of insinuates in that little dialogue that, look, Fist just gave you guys all the reason you need to be okay with me killing him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He just sold out the Corian in favor of Saren, and he's like, you know, a triple agent at this point. Why are you even mad?
Right, right. And Shepard's like rebuttal here in this clip, like because of the choice that was made, is basically like, oh, we don't shoot unarmed people. But that, if that's the only rebuttal you have, is just like, not like he didn't deserve that, not like, you know what I'm saying? Just like, well, we don't shoot unarmed people. Like, that's not cool. Like, that's right. Like an honor thing.
Yes. That is an honor thing. Very well put. It's an honor thing that, just frankly, Rex doesn't care about.
Right. Like, yeah.
And you know, of course, Rex doesn't care about it because he's a space mercenary and his race has been wronged in so many different ways. But on the other end of it all is kind of like, you know, have you ever worked with an old guy who has seen so much shit that he just doesn't care anymore?
Uh-huh. Sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Rex is like old as hell at this point. Uh-huh. Rex literally dates back to like the Krogan Rebellion era and post-war era of that. He's so old that you can only imagine all of the different situations he's been through and all of the different permutations of choices and things where he knows pretty much how any given conflict is going to play out, especially mm-hmm. if he's been a mercenary for this long.
Right. And it, like, the you have a gun or not, it doesn't matter in the end. It doesn't matter. I'm doing my job. Like, that's just the way this works. Come on.
And that's why I really wanted to like kind of just put it right in our listeners' faces about like, hey, you know, this image that the community has made of Rex in Mass Effect 2 and 3 of him being a lovable grandpa and doesn't everyone love crotchety old Rex? Like, yes, we do. However, you know, back in Mass Effect 1, he does show us exactly who he is at that point. Mm-hmm. At that point, mm-hmm. because we also have to remember, there's no hope for the Krogan, or very little hope for the Krogan at this point, as far as Rex can see it. No one has cured the genophage. No one's even talking about it. So, yeah, I'm not terribly surprised that he's going to be even more stone cold.
Right. Yeah, sometimes Grandpa has a past. Sometimes you find out about that past.
Right. This is like Clint Eastwood in the beginning of Gran Torino.
Right. Yeah. Okay, so we're getting into like his personal stuff. So when does he open up about his backstory? Because he talks a little bit about it in the comics. Like, we covered a little bit about that, but most people haven't read the comics, and so when does that happen?
Right, he goes into a little bit of his history even before the comics take place, and he does that in Mass Effect 1 a little bit, and he serves, basically what the player gets right away when you talk to Rex is Rex is serving as a vehicle for Krogan lore in Mass Effect 1.
Right.
He, much like Tali with the Corians, much like Garrus with the Turians, but we do get a little bit of the lore told to us through his own lens. And you find very quickly that the genophage has personally impacted him. Here's a little bit of when we can first talk to him on the Normandy.
What's your story, Rex?
There's no story. Go ask the Quarian if you want stories.
You Krogan lived for centuries. Don't tell me you haven't had a few interesting adventures.
Well, there was this one time the Turians almost wiped out our entire race. That was fun.
I heard about that. You know, they almost did the same to us.
It's not the same.
It seems pretty much the same to me.
So your people were infected with a genetic mutation? An infection that makes only a few in 1,000 children survive birth? And I suppose it's destroying your entire species?
I suppose it isn't all the same.
I don't expect you to understand, but don't compare humanity's fate with the Krogan.
I was just making conversation. I wasn't trying to upset you.
Your ignorance doesn't upset me, Shepard. As for the Krogan, I gave up on them long ago. The genophage infected us, but it's not what's killing us.
Are your people really dying?
We're sure not getting any stronger. We're too spread out. None of us are interested in staying in our own system.
Lots of species have left their homes and prospered.
But they go to colonize new worlds. We're not settlers. We're warriors. We want to fight. So we leave. Hire ourselves out. And most of us never go back.
I like at the beginning where he's like, basically, I don't tell stories. It's just like,
I don't have any stories.
Well, I feel like there's a little bit of a nuance in that, like, I don't tell, like, it's almost like he's discounting the word story as something that, like, if you want stories and fairy tales and entertainment, that's not what I do. Like, I'll tell you about my history. That's not a story. I feel like he's trying to make that distinction on some level. Like, if you want a story, talk to the Koreans. They'll give you plenty of stories. But, like, if you want to talk about real stuff, here's what's real. I feel like that's kind of the direction he takes it.
I like that. I like that interpretation a lot because Rex is very no-nonsense.
Yeah.
Very down to brass tacks. He would not view what he's gone through as a story. He would view it as a sequence of events that maybe he might get a chuckle out of or maybe he doesn't, but he's not going to be approached to be entertained. If someone wants to actually listen and maybe glean something, I can see him willing to impart that wisdom, but we also, again, have to remember at this point in lore, Rex is more selfish. The presence or potential for a cure for the Junophage actively develops his character so much more than we saw before. Mm-hmm. And not just that, having a leadership role in charge of Clan Erdnot later in Mass Effect 2, that also develops his character. None of this has happened at this point. So, you know, he's basically gotten by watching his back. And the other thing is, we should remember, mercenaries who are acting solo are not going to survive too long if they're constantly divulging personal information and history about themselves
to
any new team they just joined up with.
Yeah, unlike James Bond, who just tells everybody his name right out of the get-go, which I've never quite understood that. That's a little weird.
Yeah, right? I mean,
you're a spy. Same. You show up and then tell everyone your name. Like, what?
Even if it's the same code name, you're using the same code name every mission?
Right. It's weird, right? That's weird.
A little bit.
So, yeah, I like how matter of fact he is. I like when he's making this distinction. It's the same thing people do when they're like, well, we're not the same because my thing is actually more of like they're seeking value. They're seeking meaning in being understood on like a much more direct and kind of nuanced level. You know, let's just not flatten everything together here. No, my history and your history are not the same. We aren't suffering the same things. And it's okay that you misunderstood that. He even has some tolerance for that in this conversation, which is interesting. He's patient, but he's also, you know, guarded and intentional.
He is, and the fact that he's so patient is almost more embarrassing for Shepard, who is so ignorant of all of the things that have been going on galaxy-wide that have impacted geopolitics for millennia.
Right, right.
And he says the way that Rex goes, it's not the same. You know, humans have your plight, and I know that you're trying to, you know, sympathize with me, but it really isn't the same. Mm-hmm. And it is a little bit of a hit to I think, the player's pride, right? Because you're just trying to, like, kind of, you know, identify with this guy and make him feel a little bit better. But then he's, like, rightfully putting you back into your place by saying, look, this Junophage is not the same as you humans being, like, butting heads with Turians because you guys got in a war 26 years ago.
Right, right, right. It's kind of the vibe I get from Shepard in this is, like, the sales guy who says all the right things but doesn't actually understand the customer.
Right.
It's that thing where he's like, I know I'm supposed to say something here to connect with you, but the customer's like, yeah, you still don't get it. Like, come on.
Yeah, like, don't tell me you get it. Just listen.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just listen.
Don't patronize me. There's more to this, and you're ignorant about it, so just ask the question. You know, like, yeah. So, yeah. Okay.
So, I love that. I love that kind of intro to Rex's own lore where we can see very clearly what matters to him a lot. from the very get-go. The genophage is one of the first things he brings up to us. Of course, it's a convenient lore vehicle, right? But I think this quote is really telling. He later says to us, "You ask a Krogan, would he rather find a cure for the genophage or fight for credits? He'll choose fighting every time."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it goes back to the warrior statement.
I think he's lamentful of that. Mm-hmm. I think that he does not like that about what he perceives to be Krogan nature.
Interesting. And being able to see things that way, I would imagine, helps him in the future when he's in a leadership position.
Right. We also, as players, have to remember that we're asking a guy who is very jaded and very cynical about the genophage and why Krogan haven't tried to pursue a cure. And he gives us this answer about they don't want to. They'd rather die. They'd rather die fighting for credits.
Right.
It's a very cynical take, right? And that's not always true for every Krogan. So I think it's important to remember that.
Yeah, and it clearly comes from a place of a lot of experience. Like, he's clearly seen that play out enough times to be like, okay, this is just the way things are. I'm going to stop fighting against it until things play out differently. So,
yes.
But we've got to go thank our patrons, so don't go anywhere. We'll be back with some more clips and some more lore about Rex. Here we go.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
So, another big reminder, Patreon added the ability to gift subscriptions. So you can pick whatever tier, you can pick however many months you want to gift, or you could ask somebody else to gift them to you. So if you've been wanting to join us, if you've been wanting to get t-shirts or join us for patron chats, or even just get some ad-free episodes for a while, you can head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast and check everything out. And when you sign up, we'll shout you out. But we don't have any new ones this week, so that means this next week, if you sign up, you'll get a shout out next week. And you can also sign up as a Shepherd tier patron and get a shout out every week, like Draco and Edboy, Kiracy, Lieutenant Ticino, Retrobot, Superfly 440, and William. And thank you to all 69 of our current patrons. Nice.
Hey, nice.
Nice. Also, if you'd like to help us out in other ways, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You don't have to listen there. You just have to have an Apple account and kind of log in to leave the review. And we don't have any other new ones for those this week either. But if you leave one, we'll read it out next week. And you can also rate us on Spotify. You can share us with your friends. You can do all that kind of stuff. You guys know how this works. But we really do appreciate the support. It's because of all of you that we're able to keep this show going. So thank you so much. All right, let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
So let's talk about Rex, and we're kind of bridging into this as we go through his story, right? As we talk with Rex and get and learn more about him, learn more about the genophage, things going on, this now begins to open up details about the Krogan and their relationships, or Rex and his relationships with different races. How does Rex feel about these other races?
Right. So, you know, remember we're talking about how Rex is very cynical. He's very jaded. A lot of that comes through with how he talks about other races. He actually has this very xenophobic and strained relationship with a lot of other races. And a lot of it is coming from Rex. Now, whether or not that's justified because of how the Krogans have been treated before and Rex's own personal experiences, that's beside the point. The fact is that Rex does not like the Turians. He hates them. Actually, he thinks that Garrus is naive. He hates the Salarians as well. And again, you know, whether or not he has good reason to do so is beside the point that this is xenophobic dialogue. And he peddles these racist... Sorry, I had to sneeze.
Sneeze time.
He peddles these racist stereotypes of Salarians being like weak little scientists who love to play with bugs. And he very clearly harbors a lot of anger. And I think that it's pretty interesting because this kind of behavior is not tolerated from the player base if it comes from a human player or if it comes from a right. human character.
Right.
The Elusive Man, Terra Firma, Ashley's own xenophobic comments. It's not tolerated. But when it comes from Rex, that's okay because, you know, fuck us, right?
But yeah, I noticed somebody commenting when this came up on a previous episode on the video recently. I was logging in, just kind of checking the stats and stuff, and I was like, oh, and they were like, oh, finally said the thing nobody wants to say, you know, like was in support of you and like saying, well, yeah, no, that actually is how people are.
That is, it yeah. is. And I think it's easier to hold our own accountable. I think that's why, right? And Ashley being sure. humans, one of our own. Now, this being said, there are some really insightful comments that Rex gives you on race relations, whether or not he means to. Like, for example, if he's with you on Novaria during that Rachni Queen mission, mm-hmm. if you choose to let the Rachni Queen go, he warns Shepard, basically saying that he and his people are going to have to pay the price for what Shepard just did, yeah. because he thought that basically all of the Krogan rebellions were for naught, essentially, because guess what? Shepard just let another Rachni Queen go. Oh, the council's going to need us again. And he says, you know, we're going to have to clean up this mess just like we did for the Salarians.
Yeah, which, I mean, like he understands the way history played out, so that's a fair prediction to make.
And in fact, because he understands the way history played out, his response to Shepard's releasing the Rachni Queen is actually more tempered, more mild than I would expect. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of Krogan would be like, what the hell did you just do?
Right.
Like,
right.
I'm not on board with your mission anymore. You're insane.
Right. Yeah, but he does stick. I mean, maybe that's part of the jaded thing. Maybe that's just the, well, crap, here it goes again, but whatever.
Yeah, I think maybe that's it too. Maybe a little part of him in the background is thinking, you know what? Nothing's really going to change anyway.
Right. And like, this is just par for the course.
Screwed as it is.
Right. You know, like, it's like in the United States when another rich or wealthy or powerful person all of a sudden escapes, you know, the legal system.
Well, no recent examples to relate to there. But, you know, yeah, it's just kind of revealing to us how Rex doesn't have I would say a short temper, because he's still composed about most things.
Yeah.
However, he has very deep-seated resentment and anger and hatred toward other races. Notably absent from those are the Koryans. He seems to actually like Koryans, given his dialogue with Tally in the elevators.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting. And I wonder if he has like kind of a kindred spirits kind of thing, where mm-hmm. the Krogan have been very clearly discriminated against in Citadel politics, as have the Koryans.
Right.
So.
Right. Yeah. And issues with their homeworlds, and there's a few parallels there. So yeah, and you know, it makes sense to write a character like that too, because if you just wrote him as like grumpy about all the other races, that just feels like, okay, is that as dynamic and real as people actually are? Probably not. You know, like, it makes it feel more real to be like, well, no, he doesn't have a problem with them. Like,
yeah, I don't know if he has a problem with Volus either. He seems to laugh at their expense, but
but everybody does. Like,
doesn't everybody? And he doesn't seem to really have a problem with anyone besides the three council races, really.
Yeah.
The Asari, yeah. the Turians, and the Salarians. And I think there's a power dynamic.
Yeah, no, that would make sense, because those would be the three that were responsible for so many of the problems that he's had to deal with or witness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and speaking of the council races, he also has kind of a history with the Spectres, or at least one rogue Spectre, specifically the rogue Spectre we're trying to hunt down in Mass Effect 1. He has a history with Saren. Kind of. Yeah. And if you skip through a lot of the dialogue with Rex, or you just straight up didn't do it in Mass Effect 1, this next clip might be new to you as well. So take a listen to this.
It won't be long now. Saren's good, but I'm better.
Good. He's rotten. To the core. I could tell as soon as I met him.
Why didn't you tell me this sooner?
I would have if I thought it was important.
I think I'd like to hear about it just the same.
This was a while ago. A bunch of mercs were bragging about a job out near the edges of the Terminus systems. They said it paid well and the boss was never around to ride them. They said he was looking for more men, too. So I checked it out.
I didn't know Saren was openly recruiting mercs.
It wasn't that open, and he only showed his face once. We'd been raiding ships in the area for months when we took out this massive cargo freighter. Our biggest haul yet. I was on board checking bodies for valuables, looking for some extra credits. That's when I saw him.
What did Saren want with the ship?
I don't know what he wanted. He was just moving through the ship, watching. A couple of the mercs called him by name, but he never spoke to them. Never spoke to anyone. I had a really bad feeling about him, so I got the hell out. Didn't even wait to get paid.
That's pretty abrupt for a mercenary to just leave without getting paid.
Oh, right. Right. Which tells you that he knew something bad was going to happen. And considering how old he is, he's probably relied on his instincts quite well for many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. I also find it pretty interesting that this is a raid on a Volus trading vessel. And even Rex didn't know necessarily what the target was, because it was stocked with mundane civilian goods. And there wasn't, like, you know, a bank vault on there. There wasn't a whole cache of military weapons.
Right. Political documents, like nothing. It's just kind of regular stuff.
My guess is, just knowing Saren and knowing the series, my guess, without having looked this up prior to verify what the actual thing was, if the lore even specifies, my guess is it was Prothean tech.
Right, right. Yeah, being disguised on like a civilian vessel. Like it
or
looks
Reaper
like
it's, tech.
Or Reaper tech. Yeah, like this just looks like a bunch of normal stuff, but then we also stuck this in the cargo hold, and then Saren was clued into that, or, you know, that could make sense.
Right, and depending on the timeline, this raid could have taken place after Saren had actually met Sovereign. After the whole ordeal with David Anderson and whatnot, or it could have taken place much earlier when Saren was just a rogue specter before he became indoctrinated in any way. So maybe he was just corrupt for a while, and he was just, you know, siphoning some things off the back end for decades and decades while enriching himself. Who knows?
Possibly. The fact that he was quiet and just didn't talk to anybody makes him sound even more sinister. You know, like, just kind of this, like, who is this guy? He didn't even talk to anyone? You know, like,
that's the boss. Don't talk to him.
Right. That feels very intentional to put in the dialogue. Like, I don't think there was any telepathy going on, but it almost makes you wonder, like, was he actually communicating with somebody, but you couldn't tell? Like, was there something else going on?
Oh, yeah. Maybe he was already indoctrinated and getting his orders from Sovereign that way.
Yeah, or there was somebody else who was also indoctrinated on the ship, and so there was communication going on between them, but you couldn't tell because there wasn't actual verbal communication.
Right. I mean, maybe. Who knows? I forget exactly if there even is a timeline attached to this. But regardless, it tells us that Rex had this run-in with Saren before. Rex's instincts were right, because he later tells us that every other merc that was on that mission was dead within a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it would be interesting if Saren had a lot of unique dialogue about you bringing Rex along, like, I should have finished you off when I had the chance,
right,
or something like
you
that.
You again? Yeah. How did you get... You know, like something enough to just be like,
right.
But then again, would he have even noticed Rex among a number of other mercenaries enough to remember who he was? You know,
Rex does have a notable scar on his face.
He does.
So maybe, sure. I mean, maybe, yeah. You know, we also learned that Rex has really deep daddy issues, which is not at all unique for Mass Effect companions and squad mates, but
yeah.
We learn that Rex's daddy issues are deeply entwined with the Genophage.
I was betrayed. I was head of a small tribe. We were trying to restore order after the war, but the other tribes were against us. They followed Jared, one of the few warlords who survived the war with the Turians. But he was old, and so were his ideas. He wanted to continue the war, He wanted us to fight. Turians, Salarians, each other. It didn't matter who, as long as we were fighting.
What did you want?
I just wanted Jared to shut up. To stop his ranting. I wanted him to stop leading the tribes astray. But he couldn't understand how much things had changed. We didn't have the numbers to go to war. Even if we did, the genophage made sure we couldn't replenish our numbers fast enough. I told them all to forget about war. We needed to focus on breeding, at least for one generation. And for a while, we were getting through. Some of the tribes started coming around.
I take it the warlord didn't appreciate that.
No, he didn't. He arranged a crush with the tribes. A meeting on neutral ground. He wanted to talk. We met at the Hollows, near the graves of our ancestors. The skulls of our dead laid bare to remind us where we come from and where we all go. It's as sacred as any Krogan place can be. Violence is forbidden.
So one of the theories about progress, at least human progress, maybe not Krogan progress, but maybe it does apply here, is that people don't really change. The kinds of people, the kind of person you are, the kind of core beliefs you have, for most people, once they are set by their like late teens, early 20s, are kind of set. And you can adjust a little bit. You can kind of, you know, maneuver that a little bit to the left or the right or whatever. But for the most part in your lifetime, you're kind of set in your ways. Progress happens in between generations. And I think that this is an example of that. This is an example of Rex going, the old ways don't work, Dad. We need to try something new. And that's how progress is working in their society, which makes sense to me.
Yeah, I also think that this reveals to us a lot about how Rex was. Rex had more hope for the future. He wanted the Krogan to start rebuilding, to stop focusing on fighting each other and killing each other long enough to have a shot. And in this way, Rex is more progressive than his dad or than other people of that time. And what happens to the progressive guy with hope? He gets betrayed by his dad.
Right.
And his dad tries to kill him.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so now you understand why Rex is so cynical, I think. I think that's where it started.
Right.
And of course, Rex has had a lifetime of hardship since then. But that's also why Rex left. You know, his dad betrayed him in a very sacred place just because Rex had dared to dream of a more hopeful future for his people.
Right. Or not just even dream of a more hopeful people, just to think outside of the box enough, and I hate that expression, but to think creatively enough to go, this has been our tradition. We are in a different situation now, so the tradition won't work for us. We need a new plan. You know, this strategy used to work in the past, but the world is different now. We need a new strategy. Let's try something new. And that's, I mean, it's really as simple as that. Hey, let's just try something different.
Yeah, and I feel like Rex stands as this example of, you know, like that, I forget exactly how the saying goes, but you know the saying about how there's no one more bitter than a failed dreamer?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like that, right. Rex is this person who had these dreams and had ambition and ideas of progress for his people, and he was beaten for it.
Right.
That there is no more surefire way to get someone more bitter and more resentful than to do that. It is to take hope and kill it in front of them.
Right.
And you will get it could have been Rex's villain origin story.
Yeah, if Rex was a more, like, he deep down he's got a good core, right? Like, he's not afraid to kill the guy who doesn't have the gun, like we talked about before. He's not afraid to be a mercenary and just do what he needs to do. But that was, he was pushed to that due to the fact that he was so poorly treated. That was kind of the last refuge. But he wasn't doing it because he enjoyed it or he was vindictive or he, you know, there wasn't that like sinister core in him.
Right. He it's not like he happily killed his own dad, but once his dad attacked him, he was like, fine, you know, you started this, I'll finish it. Right. But at the same time, you know, if it were Rex's villain origin story, he could have easily taken that experience and said, you know what, fuck the Krogan, and then just gone any different direction right. from there.
Well, you want to burn it down, then we'll burn it down. Like,
exactly. Let's do it,
you know.
Yeah. Hell hath no wrath like a Rex scorned.
Sure. Yeah.
So, you know, Rex, I think, at the very minimum, takes this pretty grim outlook on his species. From this experience, the way that he sees things, most Krogan would rather die in battle than try to rebuild. So we're screwed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we've got one more clip. What's this one about?
This is how Rex's story can, in my opinion, prematurely end. And it's one of the most well-known scenes in the entire trilogy. It's on Vermeier, where we're talking with Captain Kirahi, Ashley, and Caden before this push to destroy Saren's Krogan cloning facility, where it's a Krogan cloning slash breeding facility, and Saren claims to have basically, through this research, through this technology, rendered the genophage completely irrelevant. Obviously, this tugs at Rex's heartstrings a little bit, and Rex takes a stand and says, no, we cannot destroy this cloning facility. I will not let you. You know, the genophage has torn apart my people, mm-hmm. and if you go forward with this, well, I guess I'm just going to try and have to stop you. And so things get really tense here, and depending on how this can go, Rex can die or Rex can survive. But here's the clip.
This isn't right, Shepard. If there's a cure for the genophage, we can't destroy it.
I understand you're upset, but we both know Saren's the enemy here. He's the one you should be angry with.
Really? Saren created a cure for my people. You want to destroy it. Help me out here, Shepard. The lines between friend and foe are getting a little blurry from where I stand.
This isn't a cure, it's a weapon. And if Saren is allowed to use it, you won't be around to reap the benefits. None of us will.
That's a chance we should be willing to take. This is the fate of my entire people we're talking about. I've been loyal to you so far. Hell, you did more for me than my family ever did. But if I'm going to keep following you, I need to know we're doing it for the right reasons.
Rex, these Krogan are not your people. They're slaves of Saren. Tools. Is that what you want for them?
No, we were tools for the Council once. To thank us for wiping out the Rachni, they neutered us all. I doubt Saren will be as generous. Shepard, you've made your point. I don't like this, but I trust you enough to follow your lead. Just one thing. When we find Saren, I want his head.
Because of course he does.
Of course he does, right?
Yeah, right.
But it is remarkable, right, that you could possibly convince him to stand down.
Yeah. Yes.
Because this is such a deeply ingrained thing in him that for hundreds of years he has harbored the hatred about the genophage. It has torn apart his family. Mm-hmm. It has torn apart his people. It forced him basically to live in exile. And here within grasp is a potential cure for the genophage. And you, who he just met within the past few months, are telling him, no, this is not the way.
Right. And I think it's a credit to his character that he's not hasty and he's willing to hear Shepard out. Like, he respects Shepard enough that he's like, totally don't get where you're coming from, Shepard. But like, okay, like, at least let's just talk this through initially. And then see right. where this goes, right?
Help me out here, Shepard. The lines are getting a little bit blurry.
Right. Like,
that's such a great line.
Yeah. Like, all right, I'll give you a chance to say your piece. Maybe, like, I respect you enough to think that you're not an idiot. So maybe you've got a good reason for this. Like, convince me.
Right. And of course, that's a game mechanic, right? Because they didn't want to just force us to have to kill Rex. But the interesting thing is
that would have been terrible. That would have been so bad.
All the different ways that this can go, right? So basically, you can antagonize Rex, You can purposely try and get this to a situation where you do have to kill him, and Shepard will kill Rex themselves. Or you could just unintentionally not have a way out. If you didn't do the Rex family armor mission, where that gives you another dialogue choice to kind of get around this, if you didn't do that, and you also lack the proper intimidate or charm skill to get him to back down, and if you told Caden and Ashley earlier that you weren't afraid of him, then Ashley will shoot and kill Rex.
Hmm.
And a lot of people don't like Ashley for that because they didn't realize it ahead of time. They didn't do the Rex family armor mission. They didn't have enough in charm or intimidate, which is like a pretty high threshold.
Yeah.
And then they get to this point and they don't want to shoot Rex, so they don't pick shoot Rex. But then Rex looks like he's going to shoot Shepard, so Ashley steps in and shoots Rex.
Wow. I didn't even know about that. Like, that's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. And a lot of people don't like Ashley for that. But I will tell you, like, in the military, if you see if you see someone outside your branch who's kind of just like a mercenary contractor with your unit, and they pull a gun on your commander, and it really looks like they're about to pull the trigger, it's probably completely understandable that you would shoot them in the head.
Oh yeah, I mean it's a defensive measure, absolutely. It totally makes sense. But also from a fan perspective, you're like, what? No, like what? Rex. Crap.
Ashley, space racist.
Ashley.
I get it. Ashley does look like the bad guy in that situation because, oh, but I was trying to talk him down. But in fact, you couldn't have. If that happened, Rex was going to kill you.
Right. And so, everything that we've heard from Rex has told us that, like, he's headstrong. He's going to do what he says he's going to do. So take him seriously. You know, like, it makes sense that Ashley would know, okay, no, I have to defend Shepard here because he's dangerous.
Right. Rex doesn't pull out a gun on someone just to pull out a gun.
Right. Yeah. That totally makes sense.
So when Rex does, you know. But of course, you know, Ashley, there's an argument that can be made that Ashley was a little trigger happy. But that also sidesteps the possibility that Shepard himself shoots and kills Rex. And I've also learned recently there is a way to game the game, and you can get Rex to automatically surrender if you don't have either Garrus or Liara. So both of them, you don't have them.
Huh.
There's a minimum number of squad mates, I guess, that the game needs you to have to finish it.
Okay.
And something like that. And basically, it forces Rex into standing down no matter what. So you can just choose anything you want in that dialogue tree,
right,
and he'll automatically stand down.
Right, right. It's a hard limit on the game. That's funny.
Huh. So, but you need to basically screw your playthrough into going to Vermeier without Garrus or Liara. So.
That's so crazy. Like, this is like, most people, I'm sure if you look at the stats, the number of people who didn't get most of the companions in the first game and then played through the second game and didn't get most of the companions. Like, I'm sure there are people who just didn't do some of the missions, but most people get the companions at least, right? Like, that's, like, you know, like,
yeah,
how many people
get recruiting everybody is the first thing that I do.
Right. Like, how many people get to Mass Effect 3 and are just like, yeah, I just didn't recruit most people when I had the opportunity. It's like, really? What? Like, that's how you play this game?
Weird. There's some people I know that really love chaos and they will do that.
Yeah. But it makes sense to go back and try it again and just be like, find out where the boundaries are. That's always fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, so obviously, you know, you can get Rex to not stand down. You can kill him, he'll die. Ashley will kill him, he'll die. Or you can get him to stand down, and then you proceed into Mass Effect 2 with Rex still alive, which has profound implications for the rest of the series, basically. If you don't go into Mass Effect 2 with Rex alive, there's a strong likelihood in Mass Effect 3 that your curing of the genophage is not going to go the way that you want it to.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Mm. So his life and death has immense implications for the state of the galaxy post Mass Effect 3. And it all goes back to the scene on Vermeier, which is ironically, genophage is at the front and the forefront of this heated debate between them.
Yeah.
So,
well, we did that episode about Shepard maybe being Space Jesus. Maybe we need to do a Rex's Space Jesus episode.
Of Rex? He's the Rex key to would the be the Krogan space Jesus. Yeah, yeah,
Krogan,
I guess so.
Krogan space Jesus. Yeah.
No, that's more like Ernan Bacara, to be honest. Ernan Bacara is definitely more in that role. Mm-hmm. I'll have to ruminate. Maybe we should get Teacup and Sheikup on the line. Ask them who in biblical stories would Rex be.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that there's another.
I don't know.
I don't know that there's another good analogy there. But yeah, it would be funny. So there we go. So that's Mass Effect 1.
Yeah, Rex, I think that's that's the gist of what we get from Rex's lore in Mass Effect 1. We don't really have him on our squad in Mass Effect 2, but he does have some important decisions that he makes and some important lore behind him, which we will we'll go over in the next part in this Rex series.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, thank you for joining us, everybody. And Sam, I'm sure you've got other stuff going on you want to share.
Yeah, I am streaming every weekend. Didn't stream last weekend because of Thanksgiving. Had friends from out of town. But I am streaming every weekend now. I'm rotating between Ghost of Tsushima, which I'm very much enjoying, and my modded Baldur's Gate 3 playthrough. Very much enjoying that as well. So go ahead and give me a follow on Twitch and Blue Sky at N7 The Legend.
There you go. And you can check out my other shows, everything I do, and all the other shows on the network at robotsradio.net. So you can check that stuff out. And we'll be back next week talking probably about, are we doing more Rex next week? Or are we doing something else? A little side thing first? What do you think?
I think we'll do another side thing first. Maybe go over some more corporations. Then we'll get back with Rex.
So like 8 more episodes of some sort of corporate war and then back to Rex.
Yeah. Yeah. 3 more months of another corporate war you never knew about.
There you go. Man, yeah. People seem to like those, though. But anyway, thank you for joining us, everybody. Have a wonderful week, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Experience holiday cheer at Tanger Outlets with savings up to 70% off your favorite brands. From fragrances to accessories and the latest styles, discover the best gifts for everyone on your list. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Coach, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and so many more. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.